Well, good morning and welcome everyone to another episode of Real Estate Investor Story Time. I'm James Orr and thank you all for joining me this morning. It's been an interesting journey, kind of like the testing of these Real Estate Investor Story Time. I think this is either episode 5 or 6, somewhere around there. And for the first few episodes, we did different stories. We kind of talked about some different people, different situations. And then for the last few, I've really decided to focus in on Peter. If you guys remember from the last couple episodes, Peter is from Denver. He is wanting to start saving up some money and investing in real estate. And he's trying to figure out a question I think a lot of you face, and that is whether or not you should take the extra time to save up for 25% down or save up a little bit less and buy 20% down properties as you save up down payments. Or he doesn't really like this idea, which I hear from a lot of you. You're like, you know, the idea of moving into a property and staying there for a year and then converting it to a rental sounds like a lot of work, sounds like a lot of effort. Is it worth the extra effort and time of only having to save up 5% to buy a property to move into, to live in, and then live there for at least a year? That's the requirement of the lender. The lender requires that you stay in the property for a year when you get an owner-occupant loan. And then eventually, after the year is up, convert it to a rental once he's saved up another 5% down to buy a property. And ultimately, he's been playing with the idea of buying 10 rental properties or 10 properties total. In the case where he's moving into them, it ends up being 9 rental properties and one that he continues to live in. In the other examples, he's renting a property and he's buying 10 rentals. So he's really struggling with this. You know, as we've talked about over the previous episodes, he's been thinking about which is better. And when we did the first case where I talked about, you know, like static numbers of property values always going up by, I think we used 2% a year and rents going up 2% a year and inflation being 2% a year, we kind of used all three of those and they were all static. You know, he really struggled with what made sense, because when we looked at those, the answer was pretty clear. It was clear that he should do Nomad. And that, you know, looking at the 20% or the 25%, you could see the difference and it wasn't significant for doing it when it's fixed. But then last week, I threw in some variability. I said, hey, listen, it's not reality. It's not fair to say that, you know, the stock market's automatically going to earn 8% per year, every single year, no matter what. I mean, that's just not realistic. And it's not realistic to think that rents are always going to go up 2% a year, or that property values are always going to go up 2% a year, or that the mortgage interest rate is going to remain at what we've seen lately as all-time lows. So we added the variability in and we said, okay, what if property values vary? You know, on average, they go up about 2% a year, but in any given year, they could go up or down. Or rents could go up or down. Or interest rates probably going up, but they could go down. And so we looked at that. And so today, what I wanted to do, last week, I showed you the range of values. I think I did 25%. Anyone remember what I did last week? Did I do 25%? I think I did 25%. If you guys can remind me what I did last week, I think I did 25%. But today, I am going to do, and by the way, we are live. If you could you know, use the chat window if you've got questions. But if you could remind me what I did last week, I probably should have looked that up ahead of time. But today, what I'm going to do is I'm going to compare the range of probability of success of him achieving financial independence, having enough passive income coming in so that he can retire, with all three strategies. And I'm going to show you how much they overlap, and I'm going to show you some new things. You guys are going to get an advanced look at some of the cash flow power meter stuff for this particular situation. And so let's start there. Let's start with taking a look at, well, and we'll even start with the 25% down. We'll look at the cash flow power meter for 25% down. And I'm just going to show you how to get there for those of you that want to do this yourself. So I looked at the 25% down payment. Oh, that's the variable one. That's not the one I want. Glad I went back and checked. So let's do the static one first. So let's go to the situation where he buys 10 25% down rentals as the starting point. I'm going to pull up the charts in the new window. And it defaults to the net worth chart. I'm going to go drill down into the charts for the properties that he owns. So I clicked on the owned property charts and I'm going to go down to rent, because the cash flow power meter is really a rent type of measurement. It's measuring rent and kind of how rents work. And if you really want to dig into like what this is, that's the class I'm teaching tomorrow night. This is sort of like an early preview, but it's important for you to understand what's going on with this situation. And you can only show the cash flow power meter for a single property at a time because it is different for every property. So I pull up just one property. I did just show this one to start with. And then I toggle on this show cash flow power meter. And now it shows you a visual of how this property is performing from cash flow. Okay. And I'll go into a ton of detail tomorrow about this. But really what I want you to know is if we zoom in, you could see this property, when he saves up and he put 25% down, had just about break-even cash flow with him managing it, with him having it professionally managed. So if he put 25% down, and which is, it's pretty typical in our market here in Northern Colorado. Your market may be totally different if you're calling in from another area. But Northern Colorado, it's pretty common that if you put 25% down, you have break-even cash flow. And that blows a lot of people's minds. They're like, wait a minute. So I'm going to put 25% down, get the better interest rate, borrow a little bit less money, save up all that money in order to get almost no cash flow. Yeah, that's why it's crazy in our market. Property values have gone up like nuts, and you know, the rents on the properties have not gone up. And Peter's from Denver, which this is about right. Maybe he gets a little bit, but in this case, we assume that's just over break-even cash flow with 25% down. Now, that's what happens if he actually has normal appreciation. You could see that it only gets better from there. This black line shows you his rents. And the dark green area is the parts where with professional property management, he's got positive cash flow. And you can see it never really dips into the part where he has got negative cash flow or where he's even got positive cash flow only if he manages it himself, or the he only has positive cash flow if we take into account cash flow from depreciation, which is that orange area, or if he only has cash flow if he got an interest-only loan. So all those are these areas down here. But you can see the black line just continues to go up and up and up. And that's not reality. Although it does reflect what he's seeing in all the other properties he's buying. I'll pull up those so we can just glance through them really quick. If you got questions about this, go ahead and just let me know in chat. But these are other properties. They look very similar to the one where we did. They all start off with about break-even cash flow and they get better from there. That's all it is, okay? Now, what does the 20% down one look like? Well, the 20% down one, when we had the fixed 2% appreciation, 2% rent appreciation, 2%, 2% inflation rate. When we had those, let's take a look at what those look like. I'm going to go to the properties and we're going to go to rent. And I can only look at one at a time because cash flow parameter is unique to each particular property. And I'm going to turn on cash flow parameter. And you can see that this one is about break-even cash flow, maybe a little bit positive, but only if he manages it himself. That's what this light green area. The light green area shows he's in the positive cash flow area, but only if he's managing it himself, if he's not having a professional property manager do it. And I'm going to take a break for a drink. Okay. So when he buys these properties with 20% down, when we have those fixed numbers, interest rates at all-time lows, to just kind of like steady increase of all that stuff. He's got positive cash flow when he manages it himself. And then eventually you can see that the black line moves into the dark green area, probably right around here. You can see it moves into that. At that point, he could hire a property manager and have it property managed and he would still have positive cash flow. The more into the dark green area it is, the more positive cash flow he'd have. In this case, he did not do that. He chose to manage his properties himself, but that's where it would have been, okay? And the same thing, like I said before, all the properties behave like this through all 10 of them. They're all, when he buys them, they're positive if he manages it himself, and they go into the green area where they become positive if you have a property manager. And so you could see over time, each one of these properties behaves very similarly when he's doing that scenario. That's if we had those standardized rates of return, like the 2% ones. Now let's take a look finally at the 5% down ones because those are different. To pull up the owned properties again. We're going to go down to rents and we're going to take a look at just one of them because the cash flow parameter is unique to each property. And you can see, oddly enough, when you put 5%, oh, I'm sorry, this is 25%. Then I must hit the wrong one. Let's see, 5%. Here we go. I was going to say, that wasn't what was expected. This is what happens when you do classes live. All right, here we go. Just one down. Cash flow parameter. Yeah. So this one, when he buys a property and he only puts 5% down, he lives there for the first year and he only puts 5% down, it is only positive cash flow when you take into account the cash flow from depreciation, the tax benefits of owning the property. Remember, when you buy a property and you rent it out to someone else, you get to the ability to depreciate the property. And if you think about depreciation as money you get back either on your taxes at the end of the year or money you don't have to pay into taxes as you go from other income you have, then some of the money you have that is coming in from this depreciation benefit gets to look like cash flow. And so when you buy a property and you only put 5% down, these properties don't have positive cash flow with a property manager. They don't have positive cash flow if he's managing himself. They only have positive cash flow if you take into account the cash flow from depreciation in this case. And so that's why it shows up in this little yellow area right here. So this is when he's living in the property. Then all of a sudden he starts renting it, rent increases. And then rent, when he first starts renting it, is in this yellow area, which means that it's positive cash flow when he has cash flow from depreciation. Eventually, a few years later, it goes and he has cash flow when he's self-managing it. And eventually later on, it has cash flow when he has a professional property manager, but that takes a little while to happen. And eventually it looks like that, okay? Now, all of these properties, as you probably guessed, when we're using these static numbers, stay the same. They all look very similar. They all look like they have positive cash flow in that little yellow area as he's buying properties over time. These are the different properties he's buying. This is the one he lives in. There's no rent on it. So that's why that one's weird. Okay. So we just covered like what happens in those static situations. But he's really concerned because the chance of it really being static, if it only going up 2% per year, every year consistently, and interest rates remaining at all-time lows, not a chance. Not a chance. Like zero probability of that happening. So what happens though, if we go and we look at this variability type situation where interest rates change and property values rate of change changes and the rent rate of change changes, all that stuff is variable. And now it's not as clear cut. Some properties he's buying are going to have better cash flow than others and some of them are not. So when we pull this up here, I'm just going to look at one. Oh, before I even do that, look, you can see the rents are varying. Actually, why don't I pull up just one of them and you can see, but they're all like this. So rents, they're not consistently going up like a straight, smooth line. It's like some months, some years they're going up. And this is when lease renews. So some years it's going up, some years going up a little bit, some years going up a little bit more. Some years it's going down, it goes up, goes down a little bit, goes up, goes down. The overall trend tends to be up over time. This is a 60-year period that we're looking at, but it tends to go up over time. If we adjust for inflation, you can see that it, in this case, it actually goes down a little bit over inflation, which has happened, okay? So, but overall it tends to go up over time a little bit, okay? The rule is, and we could show different ones to show the same thing happening, right? Like this is, this one's another property. This one went up. If we look for adjust for inflation for that one, then it goes down a little bit too. But, you know, it starts out at around 2,200 and ends up around 1,922 in inflation adjusted dollars, okay? But this is reality, right? I mean, he could buy a property and we could see a period of rent decline, just like we saw here. This is a period of rent decline. And this is a little period of rent decline. This is another period of rent decline. And overall trends to go up. Okay, so what does this look like when we look at the cash flow parameter for this? Oh, it's very different than what we saw before. And this is the challenge that Peter is facing. This is his real issue, is that, you know, before it was basically break even with professional property management. Now it's actually negative, like way negative, even negative taking into account cash flow from depreciation, even putting 25% down. How is that possible, James? He put 25% down. Why would he even buy the property? That's a good question. But this is what's happening in our modeling. We have a situation where interest rates are probably rising. We can look at this and see, but interest rates are probably rising. The rents may or may not be going up. The appreciation on the property may or may not be going up. And so imagine a situation where interest rates have gone up, rents have not gone up or gone up very little, and property values have gone way up. Now, all of a sudden, this has negative cash flow where before it was break even. That's crazy. That's really crazy. But that's what's happening in some of these scenarios. And if we ran this again, it would be different because we set the variables, as we described last week, to be a range of values, okay? So this one has negative cash flow. Eventually it becomes, goes into that yellow area. It's hard for me to mouse over, but eventually it goes into that yellow area you know, months one, whatever it is, 80 to probably 200 and small change. It's in that yellow area, which is the cash flow, including cash flow from depreciation. So it's positive cash flow there. Then eventually it gets, goes up into the point where if we were self-managing, it would have positive cash flow. And eventually it drives up right here into the area where it is positive cash flow with professional property management, but it drops back down where it actually becomes only positive if we're self-managing it. And then eventually we pay off the property and it's positive cash flow for that whole time. Okay. So that's an example of one, but each one of these that he's buying 10 over time, as soon as he saves up down payment to do that. Now, here's the crazy part about this, right? If you don't have extra cash flow coming in from buying this first 25% down property, it's going to slow down his ability to buy the next property. Because even though he is saving money, and I think he's saving $1,000 a month, if you remember correctly, from when we set up this kind of person. But even though he's saving $1,000 a month there, if he doesn't have positive cash flow from here, if he's got to feed this property and to do it, it slows down his ability to buy the next one. So here's the next property that he bought. Again, this one just happened to be positive cash flow with cash flow from depreciation. Then eventually it goes up and it's positive even with professional property management. And this one does pretty well, honestly. Okay. But that's just chance. It's market. This one's ugly. It is way negative cash flow when he buys the property. Like not even, it wouldn't even be positive if he got an interest-only loan. And then it takes a long time for it to actually get to the point where it's positive. And then eventually it's free and clear and it's got positive cash flow. This is when the loan gets paid off. Okay. So you can see all that in these charts, this new cash flow parameter. This is another one where it starts off slightly negative, even with interest-only loan. And then it goes to the point where at least he's kind of, you know, positive when he takes into account debt pay down. And then it's positive with the cash flow from depreciation. Then it's positive if you manage it yourself. Then it's positive if you're property manager. So you can see this one is doing that. And each one is a little bit different. This one's ugly to begin with. This one actually never really gets pretty until it gets paid off. That's really bad. This one's really ugly too. So is this one. I mean, this one's the worst of all of them we've seen. So is this one. So is this one. And so is this one. Oh, this must be a Zoom. Oh, no, it's not. Just when he's buying these so late that we don't even have a lot of data on them. Okay. So that's an example of him doing 25% down, which you would have thought at the beginning, that would have been the best one for cash flow, right? This is what's blowing my mind is, you know, we would think, hey, listen, he's going to save up the full 25% to buy the properties. He should have his best cash flow with that one. But it turns out when you have market conditions that are somewhat random, I mean, rents are going up on average 2%, but there's years where they go down and years where property values go up. And rents and mortgage interest rates are going up. So what's crazy about this is the one where we thought he was going to have the best cash flow may not even be the right one. It may be the one that he doesn't get good cash flow. And so when we run this, which you'll see here in a few minutes, when we run this 100 times or 1,000 times and we show you the range of values you get, this is what could be happening. We could have runs where rents are going up and property values are staying low and interest rates are staying low, and we could do amazingly well. It could be phenomenal. It could look so awesome. We could retire in like 20 years or whatever the number is that we're going to see. And it could be great. Or it could go the other way. And I think you need to plan for this. You need to look at this and say, hey, you know, okay, so here's my strategy right now. What happens if the market's going against me? What is my plan? And adjust your plan and kind of try that and see how that performs in various market conditions. Okay. And I think the lesson to take from Peter's analysis here for you is you need to put in your stuff into the software. And then you need to say, okay, I plan on buying a property whenever I save up a down payment, or I have enough money, I could buy 20 at the start. I'm going to buy one every single year, or I'm going to buy one, you know, in March, and then I'm going to buy another one in July, and I'm going to wait for 2 years, I'm going to buy another one. You do whatever your plan is, and then let's go ahead and model what realistic assumptions about what the market could do, a range of values that the market could do. We could say, let's pretend we're going to see really high inflation. Let's pretend we're not going to see high inflation. Let's pretend interest rates are going up a lot. Let's pretend interest rates don't. What happens and how does my plan get impacted by all that? Okay. So that was the one with 25% when it's variable. Let's look at 20% because I can. So I'm going to go down to own properties, rent. I'm going to pull up just one. Again, the rents are variable. Just this one and turn on cash flow parameter. And you can see by chance, because he's, this is the 20% down one, this one actually started off pretty good. He actually had about break-even cash flow with him managing himself. Okay, so that's the first one. And it got better from there. It can kind of continue up. And it's random. If I ran this again, it would be different. So I'm just going to pull up a whole bunch of different ones. And we're just going to look at the 10 properties he bought in this particular run and see how he did. Yeah, this one wasn't bad either. This one he had slightly positive cash flow, including cash flow from depreciation. Yeah. And Jason's making fun of me saying, because I can. Yeah, because I mean, that's why, the charts. But this, oh, here. So this is an interesting one. So this third property he bought has way negative cash flow. This one's ugly. When he's ready, when he saved up enough for his down payment to buy his third 20% down rental property, the market sucks. And so step back for a minute. Like, let's pretend this is reality for Peter, because this is his situation, right? He went and he bought two properties and he was able to save up enough money where he could buy his third. But the market conditions, when he's finally got enough money to buy his third property, sucks. You know, he's sitting in a market, which, you know, a lot of people argue, like today for folks, right? They tell me, hey, listen, James, you know, it's crazy. We've seen this run up in prices. Prices are getting out of control. Rents have not kind of kept up with prices, but interest rates are at all-time low. That's the only saving grace we have right now. But maybe in this situation, interest rates are up, prices were up, and rents were down. It doesn't look pretty. So what does he do? What does Peter do in this situation? He's ready to buy his third property. Does he wait? You know, do we go ahead and set the rule and say, hey, Peter, only buy properties when they're positive cash flow at the very beginning? We could do something like that. But honestly, what's crazy about it for Peter is he doesn't know what's going to happen. You know, I was going to pick up my sheet of paper and hide the like rest of the chart to show you that you can't see it. But then I realized you can't see my screen that way. You only see the graphics of the screen. So it doesn't do any good. But pretend for a minute. I don't know if I could do it in another way, or I do it, but pretend for a minute, you don't know what's going to happen in the future. You don't know that rents are going up or down or whatever is going to go on there, which is, that's the challenge, right? We don't know what's going to happen in the future. So you have to plan for all of these possibilities. And that's the tricky part for Peter. So Peter decides in this case, he's going to still buy the property with negative cash flow. How's the next one? Little better than the last one, but not much. It's still negative cash flow at the beginning. Eventually, after a couple of years, it starts getting much better. Okay. Eventually it becomes, you know, really positive cash flow, does really well for him. Another year, this one starts off okay. He's got positive cash flow with self-managed, and then it goes up from there. So that's not a bad one. This one, that's great. I mean, he's got, with 20% down, he's able to buy a property where even with professional property management, it's about break even to start, which is awesome for him. Right? This is 20% down. So here's another one where it's positive with these, if he's self-managing, and another one where it's, you know, positive if he's, you know, got some cash flow from depreciation. And then here's another one where it's positive if he self-manages. And so you could see the range of values we've got here. Okay. Let's go ahead and do the 5% down Nomad ones and show you where those are. And then let's go look at some probabilities of success by taking a summary of us running this 100 times, where we have 100 ranges of values for this. And I could show you how this impacts his ability to hit financial independence and retire early. And that's probably where we're end, because I can go get McDonald's for breakfast, because McDonald's stopped serving breakfast at 10:30. Oh, I guess they do breakfast all day now, but I like breakfast before 10:30. So that's why we're going to do that. All right, so here we go. What else I was going to show you? I was going to show you the variable ones for the 5% down Nomad ones. So we're going to go to the own property charts. We're going to go to rents. And you can only do one. And then show cash flow power beer. All right. So the first one, not bad. It's sort of like what we expected when we had the static values. We're slightly positive, including cash flow from depreciation. So you're buying a property, you're only putting 5% down, you're getting a better interest rate. And by the time you actually start renting the property out, because there's, you're not renting it during this period where rent is at zero. And then when you do start renting it out, you're about positive, including cash flow from depreciation. So it holds its own, is the way I like to think about it in that case. So that's your first property. Let's take a look at some of the other ones and see just how ugly this gets. Because it can get ugly. All right. So this one's ugly. This one is negative cash flow when you start off. It's even more negative than if you had an interest-only loan at the very beginning, and then finally it kind of picks up a little bit. But that one starts off pretty ugly. But over time, it gets better. You can see that. Okay, so eventually it gets to be positive cash flow, buying it with 5% down. What's the next one? This one's negative cash flow if we include some debt pay down. So So you can see it's in that area where you have some debt pay down. So it's in that area. This one is probably about break even, including your cash flow from depreciation. This one's negative. You know, it's negative. If you have an interest only loan, it's positive. But other than that, when we don't have an interest only loan. So think about it that way. And I'm going to go over this cash flow power meter in detail tomorrow night. You'll get a ton of stuff on this, but it's interesting for you to be able to see it. So you've got a bust here. GN says they have the best coffee. It must be McDonald's. I don't drink coffee, so I don't know. But I bet you it's good. So here you go. This is like a negative cash flow to start with, and it gets better over time. Same type of idea. This one's actually pretty good. You have about break-even cash flow with cash flow from depreciation. This one, you have about break-even cash flow with cash flow from depreciation. Same thing here. So that particular one, this is the one where we're living in, so you never rent it. So turns out the buying the 5% down in this particular case didn't do that horribly well. It didn't do horribly bad either. You know, it's just okay. All right, so let's take a look at this stuff. I'm going to go show you a summary of the range of values. I think I showed you guys this one last week. I think I started with 25% down. So this is a summary. And if you go watch last week's Real Estate Investor Storytime, you'll get a detailed description of how this works. But I'm going to turn off some things today, which I didn't do last time. And we'll take a look at this together. Whoops. James, you're just clicking. I don't know what you're doing. That's all right. We'll figure it out another day. Okay. So this shows you the range of values for when Peter hits financial independence, where the income from his rental properties is enough to support the income he needed in order to retire. So basically it replaces his income, okay? And go watch the previous classes for a lot more detail on that. But it shows you that, like, where it crosses this red line is where we see the worst case happen. So right about here, I would say, because there's a couple that bounce up there, but they kind of stay above it right about here at about a month, 308. So in the worst run of all the runs, of the 100 runs we did, if he put 25% down, his worst is, I guess actually it's the other way. It's his best case scenario. The fastest he's able to get to retirement is about 308 months from now, which if someone wants to do some math, I'd say 20 years would be 240, 25 years would be 300. So 25 years, 25 years and 8 months. If I'm not mistaken, like that's the way that math works. Okay, so it's about there. And you can see his worst case scenario is even after 60 years, he has not retired. That's ugly. Okay, let's take a look at, instead of looking at like worst case and best case, let's take a look at the like 80% of the values, like his sort of like the excluding the worst 10% and excluding the best 10%. And if you look at that, 80% of the time, he'll be able to retire somewhere between month 348 and month 607. So somewhere in that range, he's able to hit retirement with 25% down, with the variables we kind of talked about before in previous classes, 80% of the time, he'll have a range of that to retire. So that's interesting, right? To be able to see what the range of values are for 25% down. What happens if we compare that to putting 20% down? Now you can see both of them on the same chart. And I'm going to take off the median line and I'll hide these just so we can see the two little color things. And so you can see the one that is blue is the 20% down area. The one that is red is the 25% down area. And if you need me to look at those, that's the red area, that's the blue. Red, blue. And if you look at them, you could see both of them. So what this tells me is if we're looking at, you know, the 80% of the middle cases, we exclude the 10% of the worst cases, the 10% of the best cases. Actually, it's just the opposite. 10% of the best cases, 10% of the worst cases. If we exclude those and we just look at, excuse me, the 80% of the middlemost cases, you could see that putting 20% down in this run, and it could change, but I don't think it will, but in this run shows you that you have a wider range of expectations. You could retire a little bit earlier, or you could end up retiring a little bit later than if you put 25% down. The 25% down gives you a narrower probability of success. It tells you it's more narrow in this range. That's what we're seeing here when we look at these two together. Okay. So you can get a feel for that if you look at the 10% to the 20% down. Now, what does it look like if we do that Nomad one? Let's go ahead and add that one as well. And again, I'm going to turn off these things. I'll cover those in a minute. Now, this one is the 5% down range. It shows you what the range of values from your best case on the left side to your worst case on the right side. And again, it's still excluding the 10% of the worst, or sorry, 10% of the best and 10% of the worst. So you can see now the 80% range of him being able to achieve financial independence, like what month it takes to happen. And you compare that to the 20% down and the 25% down to the 5%. So you can see like where these things are. This is the green line right here. And you could see the other two behind it. So to answer the question of which one he should do, if he's willing to move in, it looks like even with these random ranges of values, it looks like it's better for him to have done the Nomad one. He has a much higher probability, this whole value, I guess you can see it, this whole value from here to here, where it's better for him to have done the 5% down Nomad strategy. Okay, this is the little area right here where it was better for him to do the, possibly better for him, I should say, to do the 20%. And then this right here is the overlap for all of them. Okay, so the other thing where I'm going to end today is I'm going to show you the number of runs that were successful, that achieved financial independence for this particular person, Peter, with these three scenarios. And it shows you the number here for each one of them. So what this tells you is what percentage of the runs actually got to the point where he could retire and live passively off of his income from his investments. And you could see here that the one that had the highest and gets to, you know, 100% the fastest is the Nomad one, the green line, this one right here. Okay. The next best one, it depends on where you measure it, but they're very, very similar, is the 20% and the 25%. You could see those, they cross at some point right here. So one becomes worse than the other one becomes better. And you could see that they kind of like swap places. Now, if you ran this enough times, I think you'd see one as a slightly clear winner, but we only ran it 100 times because I didn't have all week to run data. All right, any questions on what we went over? Because Peter's concern is, and you could put him in the chat, Peter's concern is who wants to move 10 times? You know, besides Jason, who's on the call, who likes moving? I don't think anyone does. Maybe Jason. Okay. But it's better. So you have to make a decision. Am I willing to do less than ideal results, lower probability of success, longer time to achieve my goals, or am I willing to move? And before you even say it, I'm gonna do this. I'm gonna do my clairvoyance trick. Here we go. This is how I'm gonna do this. Okay, ready? This is how I'm gonna do this. Ready? This is like the old crazy mind reading trick. Okay, I'm gonna fold up a piece of paper. I'm gonna take a piece of paper out. I'm gonna tell you. I'm gonna read it from you, and I'm gonna tell you what exactly is on your mind. Ready? James, I would love to do this, but my spouse won't agree. Did I read your mind? Did I tell you exactly what you were thinking? Because most of the time, the people that come to class are the ones like, okay, I see the math. I get it. It sucks, but I'm willing to do it. The problem is, James, my spouse, my husband, my wife, they won't do it. They're unwilling to do that. I know. I mean, I could give you some lines to practice in front of the mirror. You know, you could say, all right, honey, we could either, you know, work for another 15 years at this job, or we could move 10 times or 5 times or whatever number you decide to do, and we could stop working 15 years earlier. What would you like to do? That's what you got to practice in front of the mirror. But what, make the numbers realistic to whatever is true for you in your situation. Okay. So that's all I got for you. I just wanted to share with you Peter's thought process over which one's going to get him to his goal of financial independence fastest and less riskiest, right? I think that's also the thing, because you could have, you know, we haven't even added in market corrections. We have like markets going up and down, kind of snaking along. But, you know, we had at the beginning of, what was it, March? Didn't we see the stock market like drop 30%? Sure, it's mostly recovered by now. Although yesterday, I don't think, I got an email from someone who's on this call right now, who basically told me the market's way down as of yesterday. So who knows if that's another market correction coming, but market corrections happen. So we didn't plan for those. We should probably add those in and see the variability and what that does to impact stuff. But Peter hasn't looked at that yet. Okay. Any questions? I'll take a sip of my beverage. And for those of you that did not see the email, although I don't know how you would have gotten on a call if you didn't see the email, this is the last story time for the year, for 2020. I am taking some time for James. November, December, could do a little bit of coding, do a little hot tub. Got my hot tub. It's been snowing like crazy up here. We got like, I don't know, some ridiculous amount of snow, and it was like 14 degrees last night. Tammy, we're out in the hot tub. Hot tub was amazing. Wow, you guys are quiet tonight. All right, this morning. No questions. I'm going to end story time. Was that helpful for anybody? Did you guys like to see kind of like digging into how the properties are performing and the variability of buying properties and seeing the percentages and how all that stuff works? You guys like that? So I'm trying to decide what I'm doing for story time in the future. Yes, Shante always loves story time. So, yeah. So in the present market conditions, this is a question from CeCe. Candace says this is great. So CeCe says, so in the present market conditions, 5% doesn't really have a lot of cash flow due to debt service, not even including crazy property taxes in some markets. And therefore, 20 to 25% seems to be better. I would say it's market dependent, CeCe. There are definitely markets where you can go buy properties and probably even with 5% down, you can make them cash flow. It depends on what properties you're buying to, right? Because there are some markets where if you bought in the really rough parts of town, sort of like the cash flow parts of town, you could make lots of stuff cash flow. I mean, you'll find properties that hit the 2% rule where, you know, the rent on the monthly rent on the property is 2% of the property value. In properties like that, you're probably having positive cash flow. But the question is, number one, do you want to live in those properties if you're going to do Nomad? And if you're not, maybe you buy in those properties, but maybe they don't see appreciation. Maybe they only see cash flow. And when you really calculate in, you know, CapEx and stuff like that, maybe they're not cash flowing as well as we think, but that's a different class altogether. But to kind of like answer your question, there's different markets and how they perform. This is Denver. Peter lives in Denver. And so we kind of went over a Denver example, but that is the case in Denver. If you put 20% down, and there are exceptions to this, right? You can find that great property that has amazing cash flow. And there are exceptions to all these rules. But in general, you put 20% down, you're probably likely to be about break-even cash flow if you're managing it yourself. You put 25% down, you're probably going to be break-even cash flow if you have a professional property manager managing it in Denver right now. And if you're lucky, if in our market, if you put 5% down as a Nomad, and you are break even, including cash flow from depreciation. So those are kind of the three easy ways to describe that rule. And there are lots of exceptions. There's lots of range of values, but I would say that is a good cutoff point for what is going to be a great deal versus a okay sort of property to buy. So let me read your question and make sure I answer it. So in the present market conditions, 5% doesn't really have a lot of cash flow due to debt service. I think that's largely correct. It's really all the factors, right? Rents compared to price, factoring in the interest rate you're able to get. But yes, I think that's true, that part of it's debt service, not including crazy taxes. And therefore, 20-25% seems to be a lot better. Yeah, it would give you more cash flow up front to have that. I think that's true. Jerry says, can I call someone? Not sure what that means. Can I call someone? Let me know what you mean, Jerry. I'm not sure what you mean by that. Ashana says, enjoy your time off with your wife. Thank you very much. I will have some time off with my wife. And my kids are coming in to visit. One of them lives here in town, but they're going to come visit. And then the other one lives in Wisconsin. They're going to come visit. And Thanksgiving, got family coming in for that. It's going to be a COVID hotspot. I mean, it's going to be like a super spreader event. We're going to have people from Florida coming in, people from Wisconsin. Of course, we'll try to be safe and stuff like that. But it's going to be crazy with everyone spreading stuff over Thanksgiving. Chris says, I like Peter. I am pretty much Peter. Yeah, if you're in Denver, this like resonates with you. This says like what's going on in your marketplace. C says, how does this change with less crazy market? Well, we can model that. You know, for Peter in the future, we could say, what happens if this is not a crazy market? Like, what happens if we have properties that have positive cash flow to start with? And we, you know, we've done classes like that in the past. We've done, we did a class. It was, I think it was cash flow versus appreciation, where we had me and Brian. Brian was cash flow market, where he had positive cash flow when he bought properties at the very beginning, but his properties were not appreciating as quickly. And basically, the longer he waited, the better his properties looked when he bought. And then I was in appreciation market, where I didn't have very good cash flow, and property values were going up, but rents were not going up as fast. And we looked at which one does better. And I showed you there are strategies you do in each market that are different, and you can make them work in both markets, but cash flow market's easy. I mean, you basically cash flow to the bank. You don't have to do anything crazy. So Jerry says, want to talk with someone about my situation. Yeah, Jerry, I am not quite ready to offer that service to somebody. So I am getting closer to that point where I might be willing to get on the phone and help you enter your stuff into the system. And then, you know, maybe we'll run scenarios over time. But I am not quite ready to offer that as a service. And it's not something I do for free. So I probably will be doing that. Jason keeps pushing me to do it, you know, sooner than later. But I am probably going to be ready to do that. I don't know, maybe in the next couple of months. We'll have to see. So, yeah. So unfortunately, I don't have a good answer for you right now. And I don't have a good, you know, particular real estate financial planner or financial planner that specializes in real estate that I can refer you to, because I don't know anyone that I would trust to kind of do some stuff like that. All right. Any final questions? No final questions. No final questions. Going once. You are very welcome. Very, very welcome, guys. Yep. So yeah, Jerry, look out for an email. You know, maybe I'll move it up higher on my list since there's definitely some demand for that. But I don't know yet. All right. Going once, going twice. You're very, very welcome. Going three times. Okay, folks, thank you very much for coming on. Hope you enjoyed Real Estate Investor Storytime. Enjoy your holidays if I don't talk to you. Well, I'll see you on the rest of the classes. Definitely come for the cash flow power meter tomorrow night. It is going to be awesome. You'll see a lot more cash flow power meter. You'll understand it a lot better, and you'll be able to use it on your own stuff. It's going to be awesome stuff. So thank you, everybody, for coming on. I will talk to you soon. Goodbye, and I'm going to go grab myself McDonald's. Have a great day, everybody. Bye-bye for now.